You're listening to the Data Center Hawk podcast, where we demystify the data center market. Data Center Hawk is your online platform for data and commentary on the data center market. Stay tuned and be sure to join the thousands of others who rely on Data Center Hawk to make decisions in the data center space.
Welcome to the Data Center Hawk podcast. I'm Mike Netzer. Today we're talking about AI, so I am joined by an AI representation of David Liggett. AI David Liggett, how are you doing?
I'm just great. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, just a real
David. It's no different, yes, than the regular.
This is a really great AI. Before we get into that, we have a couple of business items to talk about. If Rhett has done his job properly, you will all be aware of this, keenly aware that we launched our new site. So this is kind of Data Center Hawk 3.0. If you've been on the site for a very long time, you probably remember Data Center Hawk 1.0.
That's right.
And as I would say, fun as it is to look back at the site and go, man, it's nothing compared to what we have now. It was awesome at the time. 2.0 was what we just sunsetted, and then that's now 3.0. So why don't you tell us a little bit about David, like why now? Why did we make the changes we made?
Yeah, well, it's been really fun to get to see all of the versions. You know, a couple things I would say. Number one, I mean, our mission, why our company exists, is to help people make better decisions in the data center space. That's what we are trying to do. So all of our work from a technology perspective, from a market data standpoint, even like, you know, the work that Rhett and team are doing from a marketing standpoint, as the company's grown, one thing that we try to thread through everybody's work is that's what we're trying to do. And so certainly our site is a big part of that. And as the, it's actually really interesting when you think about how much the industry has changed. Mm-hmm. There's some things that, you know, you build a technology project or a product around what are the main parts of the industry, and as time changes, you have to change the product to match that. So a couple things that I'm really excited about, you know, one is we've talked about this before. We have a whole series on it. This hyperscale part of the data center industry has grown significantly. And so now to be able to see the market view from both a colocation standpoint, this is multi-tenant data center colocation, and the hyperscale growth. So this is when these large companies go out and buy their own land, they build their own data center, they operate it themselves, to see that picture in areas like Dallas and Chicago and London and Singapore and, you know, these different cities in the U.S. and internationally is really fascinating. And that's a lot of the maturity that we've seen on an international basis has been those companies growing. So that's one thing. You know, two, if I think about like the some of the things that might seem minor but have become part of the major decision making going on. One is sub-market distinction. So if you're in a you know, one of these large data center markets, we're seeing data center sub-markets come up, and almost these facilities cluster close to one another because of certain, you know, power reasons or connectivity reasons, land site size, those type of things are making that happen. So really being able to break those down, understand how big these submarkets are, why they're growing the way they are, why areas have not grown. You know, there's some submarkets. In Phoenix, there's one that the city council's basically just said, hey, we're tapped out. We're done with data center growth. So this
used to be— We don't like the internet.
That's right.
That's what they're saying.
This used to be a very vibrant area, and there's large data centers there. There's nothing coming online. So those are the type of things that now on our product you can really understand. And then we've got some really, really, this just sounds nerdy, but like very cool mapping solutions that you can do on our site now. You know, we are trying to almost make an invisible industry come to life, and you to be able to see that quickly. Mm-hmm. So that you can make a decision. I mean, these are not, people know this on this podcast, but we're not talking about like, you know, $10 million, $20 million. These are $100 million, sometimes $1 billion decisions that companies are making. I'm not making it up, $1 billion decisions. And so to be able to see it and to understand it more granularly, more clearly, that is why we've done what we've done. So pardon the soliloquy, but that's what we've done.
You know, this is basically the result of 2 years worth of effort, you know, from our dev team, our requirements team, our research team to build all these new data sets and visualizations. But it also came with, you know, I would say hundreds of hours of conversations with our customers to go, hey, does this help you do your job better? Does this help you make better decisions in the data center space? And so if you are one of those customers we talked to, thank you very much for your feedback. It was extremely instrumental for us developing the new site.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been to the site in the last 2 weeks, go to datacenterhawk.com, check it out.
It's our greatest hit.
Super slick. It's our great, it's the culmination of our life's work.
That's right.
Well, David's life's work. It's our last 2 years. Okay. So let's talk about AI. It's the buzzword of all AI. Buzzwords in the data center space, really across all spaces.
Yeah.
I still think back to, I think it was the Arizona iced tea they just like mentioned that they were using AI in their quarterly earnings one, like,
that's
shot
right.
up.
That's all you gotta do.
And they're like, oh, wait a minute, what does AI that's have right. to do with iced tea? Back down. But, you know, there's some real meat on the bone now. So I think let's just set the table a little bit for AI.
And actually, as you're warming up to that, the one thing I would say industry-wise, you know, we've been doing this now for a long time, and all the buzzwords and technologies that have been mentioned to us about, hey, this is really going to change the data center industry, this is really going to impact the market. I would tell you that in my experience, this artificial intelligence and how the industry believes it will be used and how it's being used has had the biggest impact on our space versus all these other technologies that are out there. And when I say that, I mean like from a demand perspective, from design, some things we're going to talk about. But this is not us, you know, blowing smoke. This is having a significant impact.
You are on the record as not blowing smoke.
That's right. So. And it's illustrated by what you're about to share too.
Yeah. So if you look at, you know, again, the biggest players in space, the hyperscale users that we all know, they're all investing significant billions of dollars, to your point, into the infrastructure, the software, everything that's needed to support AI compute, to productize it in a way that's going to benefit their customers. But you look at like Microsoft, you know, last quarter, almost 11 billion, which they've said much of that is on AI cloud compute. Mm-hmm. Google, 7 billion in CapEx, says the largest component for servers, which represents a meaningful increase in investments in AI compute. Amazon, for the year of 2023, about 50 billion in CapEx. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, about 40% of that CapEx has been towards AWS, but they've also said the percentage of their CapEx towards AWS from Amazon as a whole towards AWS is increasing. You know, Meta is saying they're spending about $30 billion in 2023, again, primarily focused on AI infrastructure. You know, Blackstone, big fund that most people have heard of, purchased QTS a couple years ago, said they're actually liquidating some office properties in order to put that money into digital infrastructure. They've smart. Called this a once-in-a-generation opportunity.
Giddy up.
And they're pretty smart guys over there. And in addition to all those groups, you've got a number of startups that are investing significant capital. I think CoreWeave, a company a lot of people have heard of, you know, raised, you know, $2.3 billion in debt financing from a number of groups, I think Blackstone included. And there's a number of groups like them that are very quickly ramping up their AI capabilities, specifically around AI cloud computing. So with that as the backdrop, just kind of people understanding like, hey, this is a big deal. The biggest, most technologically advanced, smartest companies in the world are dumping billions, multiple tens of billions of dollars into this space. So with that as a backdrop, it only goes to imply that that would have an impact on demand. So people actually need data center power space and cooling, which is what we have historically tracked.
Sure.
So from your standpoint, how has that impacted demand really over the last probably 6 months?
Yeah, and maybe even longer than that, if you think like maybe 12 to 18 months. It's impacted demand in a number of ways. Number one, the requirement sizes are growing. So if on previous podcasts, we've talked about how 15 years ago, data center demand, the biggest deal is probably 2 to 6 megawatts. And then it started like growing and growing and growing. And I would say when we went through I'll call it the cloud craze. That's probably not a good term for it, but that's what I'm going to use. From like 2017 to 2020-ish, 2021, you know, deals were starting to get in like the 36 megawatt range, 72 megawatt range. You saw some that were like deployments over a period of time that were in the 100 plus megawatt range. You know, now we are starting off with projects that like have that as their end goal, 100 megs, 200 megs. You know, there's groups that are asking about needing to deploy 500 megawatts over a 2 year period. You know, the word gigawatt has been used on different requirements. And so these are just, you know, I mean, think about this from a construction side of things. You know, if you said, hey, it's $10 million a megawatt as a construction cost or whatever. Now take that over, you know, a gigawatt. I mean, we're talking so much money. And what you just mentioned, you know, if you do follow the money, it's like that just shows you the level of conviction that these companies have around chasing AI. So number one, the sizes have gotten larger. It's pushed the demand has also changed because it's making companies look at like the actual sources of the energy, mm-hmm. because now we're not talking about a 30 megawatt project that is built in 2 years and that's it. We're talking about hundreds of megawatts being delivered. And so the due diligence that's being done is done a lot further up the stack. It's not just the site and the power company. It is now trying to figure out, can this region support this type of growth? And it's definitely impacted the way site acquisitions have been happening over the last 12 to 24 months. We're seeing companies spend a lot more money on, you know, buying sites that they can use in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years to, you know, house some of this demand. And so we're talking, you know, this is like $100 million, $150 million, $200 million on a land site.
Yeah.
To go do this work. And, you know, 10 years ago, we would joke that the land cost was a rounding error when you think about the amount of money that's going on. Now, it still is a very, is a much smaller part of the total financial picture when you think about one of these data center projects, but
it's not a rounding error.
Yeah. Anymore. The percentage has gotten larger. So,
and just the trickiness, the effort that's required to make sure that you can have that runway to the significant amounts of power. It reduces the number of land sites that are viable or the amount of work that's required to make a land site viable.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that demand has done that, though, as it's gotten larger, is it's created more awareness of these projects in a good way and probably bad way for the industry. You know, one, from a good way, it's allowed people to see, like, what this technology is doing in the world, how it's helping industries. You know, at some point it's like saving lives. It's, I mean, it's doing some incredible things. If you flip it, you go, hey, there's people that in some ways are against this type of growth because they don't want these type of buildings in their communities, or they're on the side of AI where they go, hey, I don't want to promote something that there's some fear around what AI can do down the road. So it has had a massive impact on demand. I can't state that enough. I mean, and that's impacting, excuse me, the ways that a lot of these companies are having to bring the supply online, you know, thinking through just the projects as a whole and things like that.
Yeah, and that this kind of spike in demand has come on top of what is already an extremely supply constrained industry.
Yeah.
So it's a bit,
yes, you know,
it's good news for some, bad news for others, but it's a little bit crazy how much additional demand we're seeing on top of the existing demand that's been there for 2-3 years.
Yeah, we were already in a supply constrained market before these large projects start coming to the market. So it's had a massive impact on the space.
Yeah. Speaking of which, anybody who is like concerned about the AI taking over the world, I would recommend Mark Andreessen. He's done like, he did like a podcast tour almost. He did like five different podcasts, kind of the same message on each of them. But I think he's got a very reasonable take on AI and where it will ultimately end up, which, spoiler alert, not taking over the world.
That's a good thing.
So
we're saved.
There is this general demand component, but the nature of the demand is different. Obviously, I think a lot of people are aware that these AI workloads are very different in nature than the GPU demand is very different than the CPU demand. But just to put a, you know, kind of quantify that, historically, data center density was, you know, 3 to 7, maybe 10 to 15 kilowatts per cabinet per rack. And that's slowly ticked up over time, but not nearly to the level that we're seeing with AI, where, you know, you talk about 100 plus KW a rack. You know, these GPU servers are extremely dense, could be 6 to 13, you know, kilowatts in a 4U space.
Yep.
So if you build that out over a cabinet, you can do the math. So that's changing the way these groups are having to adjust. It's obviously more power and a smaller footprint. And so talk a little bit about how that has impacted these groups. Can you get smaller acreage and build a smaller site with the same amount of power? Or how has that changed how these groups are kind of handling those requirements?
I used to go on data center tours 10 years ago, and every data center tour you went on, you would hear about the density. We're a data center. We can do, you know, 150 watts a foot, then 200 watts a foot, 300 watts a foot. And so then if you just ask the question, okay, where's that being done in the data center? And they say, well, we're not doing it yet because, and it wasn't that they couldn't, it was that the customers weren't mature enough with their infrastructure design to want to need that. Now, if you go into some of these facilities, you can follow the noise or follow the heat because that is where these higher density solutions are. And so, So part of it is just the customers embracing, you know, higher densities. And I would say, like, let's put AI to the side for a second. These are like financial companies, technology companies, insurance companies historically that have just done it the way they had done it. I think now they're doing it differently because there's value into the higher densities. But now a lot of the, design conversation is around, you know, the cooling aspect of this. If you are going to densify these racks significantly, you know, and we're not talking, let's talk 30 to 50 kW per rack. And then if you go even higher, there's some news recently that, you know, Cyrus One's talking about doing, I think it's 300 kW per rack with some liquid cooling solutions. You've got to think through, hey, how do we cool this in a different way? Because we're now allowing a much denser environment than we had in the past.
Yeah, I think this will push some of that, you know, higher density cooling solutions forward. And there's a variety of them as you kind of go up the density, you know, chart. I think this will probably push some of those technologies forward.
Yeah, and the AI stuff, it's so much more dense than the other solutions that we've seen. You know, data center operators are busy thinking through, you know, level one designs, the phase one designs, phase two designs. And I think we will see that take a similar path that we saw the cloud data centers get built over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, where historically we were seeing, you know, 20 megawatt buildings, and then it switched to going, hey, can we deliver 4 9-megawatt halls to make 36 megs? Can we put a building right next to that to make 72 megs? You're starting, I think you'll see the same thing happen on the AI side from a density perspective. You know, one of the challenges is going to be with AI and the growth of AI is the hardware and how quickly the components can be produced to grow the technology. And that's going to be a challenge, you know, moving forward if the industry and companies adopt it the way I think people think they will.
Yeah, I think it's going to require a lot of flexibility. Yep. I mean, there's some super smart folks working on this, but like this concept of like almost like mixed density, where you have the flexibility within your site to house some high density racks, some lower density racks, and all that entails. But there's some super sharp people working on this, and some of the conversations I've had recently, it's like way over my pay grade technically. But again, it's an opportunity for some, but it's going to require some work. You know, then from like a location standpoint, and we've touched on this in the past, but like, how does the specific AI demand impact, you know, the location of where these, you know, where the demand is going?
Yeah. The story in the data center industry over the last 5 years has been major markets getting bigger. Northern Virginia, Phoenix, Dallas, you know, Atlanta is starting to grow more. So there's these areas, Chicago, that historically have been one size, now they're growing. You know, if you take that to Europe, you're looking at areas like London, Frankfurt. I think over the last 12 months, you've seen AI gobble up what's remaining of the power in these markets, as well as sites that are under construction or in the pipeline to be delivered. The good news about AI deployments is they are not as latency sensitive as some of the cloud availability zones are. So with that comes the ability for those projects to move into maybe some areas that geographic areas that historically haven't been, like data center hubs or growth areas. So I think that if you can find the land, you can find the power. I think you'll have some audiences that will listen to how quickly you can deliver it. The challenge when we see data center projects move from mature markets to less mature areas would be you can trade one problem for the other. So you solve one problem, but in doing so, now you've got another issue that you've got to solve for. So if you can solve the site and power problem in a tertiary market, it's great, but you might have a connectivity issue. You might have a tax incentive issue. You might have a labor issue. You know, I hear all the time, like, can't you build a data center anywhere? And it's like, well, yes, but you have to solve all the problems, and that costs money. And someone go, hey, I can solve this problem over here faster and cheaper than I can solve it over here, so it doesn't make sense to build a data center anywhere.
Yeah, it's like every data center project is solving 15 problems at once, and AI probably changes the equation for two or three of those problems.
Sure.
So the other problems still persist and still need to be solved, but it does change its slightly.
Yeah.
The calculus.
And to meet the large power requirements, these deployments are going to have to go to places that are either that are creatively thought through on how they can do that.
Yeah.
And it's a long game approach. The good news about our space is I think there's a lot of people that would love to get into the development side and the site selection side, but you got to have a lot of money to do it. So it's, in one way, it's good because it keeps out new groups that would probably stumble, and it would be a challenge to catch up to the way that these large companies are using this, you know, space. I would say the bad news is it's, you know, it takes a lot of money and a lot of equipment. And while there is a lot of money interested in the data center industry right now, which is good, you know, the interest rates have been a bit challenging for some of these companies to figure out how to deliver what they need to and hit the returns they need to. But then also just the equipment being able to keep up and match what the power requirements are. But the good news for our space is that we can locate these projects in areas typically that you wouldn't think are large data center markets. But the challenges just come in how you solve all the other problems.
Yeah, and so then kind of all those things added together, the demand plus the design changes plus the location challenges, that's going to have an impact on pricing. And I think it may take some time for that to all work itself through the system.
Yes.
But there's just the pure demand standpoint that's going to drive potentially pricing up.
Yep.
But then there's trying to figure out, probably from the operator side, how to price these newly complex deals and deals that are complex in new ways than they've dealt with before. But what are you seeing from like just a pricing impact across the board from the AI demand?
I mean, it's gone up considerably. You know, you have these new companies that will pay higher rates on a price per kW per month basis than these larger companies that have better credit and they've been around a long time. These newer companies, you know, as you mentioned, newly formed, so they don't have the historical track record of performance. So they've got to do something to, number one, get in line to get the power before anyone else does, and number two, de-risk the investment by the data center operator. Mm-hmm. So that's driven, you know, that pricing up. You know, the other thing that I think is a really, in my opinion, positive to the industry, you know, 15 years, when I got in the space, there was like the all of the data center operator community was pushing the users to do it one way. You know, you have to lease in these increments of, you know, whether it's 2 megawatt blocks or 1.2 megawatt blocks or 4.5 meg blocks, and this is how the pricing needs to be set up. We don't do anything different than this. This is how it is. And that's changed considerably. Like, you couldn't, the industry couldn't grow the way it is growing if there wasn't more creativity put around deal structure. So, you know, right now, price per kW per month on like a gross plus electric basis, people in the space would know what I'm talking about, doesn't always make sense if a company wants to lease, you know, 72 megawatts or 96 megawatts to take the whole building. They might want to do a triple net deal where they actually control the expenses, you know, so you bump that deal down by 20% and then they just pay the base rent and the expenses on top of that. We're also seeing some of these, you know, yield on cost solutions that have allowed these big companies to get more comfortable with doing the deals that are needed. But when you look across each one of those deal structures, rates are up.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be for the what you talked about related to just some of the issues with lack of supply, but then also with the size and how quickly things are growing. So the rates have just gone down since I got into the space, you know, back in 2007. And then in 2020, 2021, things started going back up. And they're escalating now for a different reason than they were 3 years ago. You know, this isn't a COVID escalation necessarily. This is a escalation related to, you know, lack of supply. And we've talked about this before. I mean, I've said this probably 10 times on this podcast. I don't see it changing anytime soon. Yeah. It just can't. The projects are too big. It takes too long to bring power to a site. Building a substation, you know, costs $50 to $100 million, and it just doesn't happen fast. So, anyway, it's probably more than you want to, but the
I think
you know, the rates are increasing significantly, and the deal structures are getting more creative.
Yeah, and there is some uncertainty with the future as far as like some of the projections for AI demand are astronomical.
Yeah.
Some people think there's some sentiment that maybe this is a bubble. There probably will be some companies that are unsuccessful in bringing their products to market, and so that could temporarily or in a certain localities bring down demand. But I do think, you know, in general, we believe this trend is going to persist.
Yeah.
In addition to all the other trends we believe will persist across the space. So this is just kind of one more layer that is making it, again, there's plenty of opportunity there for groups, but it's harder and harder to capture that opportunity.
Yeah, and one thing I would add as we wrap up here is, I think with the demand, everybody needs to make sure that there's due diligence around what is really being committed to, because it's very easy to see some of these announcements and some of even some things that I've seen in the industry that have been announced related to like how much demand has actually been committed to, and typically it's far less than what you see.
Yeah, from tap the brakes.
Yeah, from an absorption standpoint, I mean, these companies are like smart. They're not gonna, you know, fully commit to things they don't know that they need, but they will set up an economic structure and a deal structure that allows them to have access to do that when they need to, you know. And I think so there's just some additional due diligence, which is what, you know, we will spend our time focused on around really trying to figure out, hey, what has been committed to. So when you hear, oh my gosh, this deal was a 600, you know, megawatt deal or a 400 megawatt deal, it's like, okay, well, let's figure out what that really, what is the capital commitment by the company? What did they just sign up for? Did they just sign up for 600 megawatts of at $140 a kW for 15 years? Probably not. Now, could they get there over time? Maybe. But there's an approach that a data center operator has to take and a user has to take to make sure that deal can make sense financially over time and give them the ability to scale up when they move forward. But so I've just, in summary, you got to do your due diligence on those numbers that come out and get thrown around on deals that are getting
sure. Done. And it's almost to the point that no number would shock me, but
sure.
At the same time, some numbers are too good to be true.
Yeah, just got to beat it up a little bit.
You got to beat it up a little bit.
And think about, like, what is a company actually committing to financially? You know, when we talk, when we hear these groups that are like, yeah, this group's building a 400-megawatt data center. It's like, you're telling me that a group is spending, you know, X amount of billions of dollars yeah. without a lease commitment from yeah. a customer. They're not going to do that. They're smarter than that. So those are the type of things you got to – beat up.
I think that's going to be on your gravestone. Here lies David Leggett, quote, you got to beat it up a little bit, end quote.
Well, gosh, that's a sad life.
No. That's just Mr. Due Diligence here. So, okay. Well, hey, that was great. I think, again, we're going to continue to keep an eye on this. It's like it's front and center in a lot of the conversations we're having, research we're doing. So as it continues to impact the space, we'll report back here. Otherwise, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.